Good morning. This is Graham Anderson from Peter Milling & Company. As most people would be aware, Peter Milling passed away last Sunday, the 18th of January. The staff at Peter Milling & Company would like to pass on their condolences to the Milling family. Join us now as we remember Peter Milling.
Well, good morning and thank you very much for tuning into the Stock and Land Report. I'm Peter Milling. Now, we've got two very nice little properties coming up for auction sale. By gee, they're crackers. I know the virus business is a very serious issue, but haven't the media made a meal of it? My goodness me, nothing but virus, 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 day and night. I don't know what'll happen if they get a cure for all this. They'll have to go back to talking about the weather. And it's a very picturesque little place, this one. Very good. It's got everything you need about it, everything right about it, and it's in the right position. Got beautiful views all around the place and good country. And I might say it's in beautiful order. You wouldn't get anything better than this one. Well, there's a problem every day if you're a farmer or a livestock breeder, every day. I hope you have a very pleasant weekend, and I hope next week we get 2 inches of rain. And, as I say each week, and think about this, it costs no more, the most important thing is if you want a trouble-free holiday, don't leave home without us. Now this one's a little short one. A man was sitting watching television when he heard his wife's voice from the kitchen. "What would you like for dinner, my love? Chicken, lamb, or beef?" He said, "I think I'll take the chicken, please." His wife replied, "You're having soup. I was asking the cat." There you are. I think that probably happens a bit too, doesn't it? I've got a bit of a story here for you this morning, just to finish up this part of the program. The sun was hot already. It was only 8 o'clock. The cocky took off in his ute to go and check his stock. He drove around the paddocks checking wethers, ewes and lambs, the float valves in the water troughs and the windmills on the dams. He stopped and turned a windmill on to fill a water tank and saw a ewe down behind the dam, a few yards from the bank. Typical bloody sheep, he thought. They've got no common sense. They won't go through a gateway, but they'll jump a bloody fence. The ewe was stuck down in the mud. He knew without a doubt she'd stay there till she carked it, if he didn't get her out. But when he reached the water's edge, the startled ewe broke free, and in her haste to get away, began a swimming spree. He reckoned once the fleece got wet, the weight would drag her down. If he didn't rescue her, the stupid sod would drown. Her style was unimpressive, her survival chances slim. He saw no other option. He would have to take a swim. He peeled his shirt and singlet off, his trousers, boots and socks. And then he couldn't stand wet clothes, so he shed his jocks. He jumped into the water and away that cocky swam. He caught up with her somewhere near the middle of the dam. The ewe was quite evasive. She kept giving him the slip. He tried to grab her sodden fleece, but he couldn't get a grip. At last he got her to the bank and stopped to catch his breath, and she showed him little gratitude for saving her from death. She took off like a Bondi tram. Around the other side, he swore the next time he caught her, he'd hang her by her hide. Round and round the dam they swam, and although he felt quite puffed, he still thought he could run her down. She must be nearly stuffed. The local stock and station rep came along to pay a call that day. He knew this bloke was on his own. His wife had gone away. He didn't really think he'd get fresh scones for morning tea, but nor was he prepared for what he was about to see. He rubbed his eyes in disbelief as what came into view, for running down the catchment came this frantic-looking ewe, and on her heels, in hot pursuit, and wearing not a stitch, the farmer yelling wildly, "Come back here, you lousy bitch." The stock rep didn't hang around. He took off in his car. The cocky's reputation had been damaged near and far, so bear in mind the work-safe rule when you next check your flocks. Stop the hazard, assess the risk, and always wear your jocks. Well, there you are. Now I'm going to hand you back now to Brett Murray.
We pay our respects to the late Peter Oliver Milling OAM, who passed away in Dubbo on Sunday, the 18th of January, aged 95. A teenage Peter Milling made his first 2DU broadcast in 1948 when he filled in for his father to present the H.L. Milling radio program. Over the years, became a trusted rural voice through his own weekly segment, which he presented until mid-2023. About 20 years ago, he shared a memory of the 1955 flood.
We got the floods down by the River Plain, and it just kept coming. What we call the old White Bridge was there in those days, and that was cut off pretty quickly. And we finished up getting all that water through the middle of Macquarie Street. I swam up Talbragar Street and I rowed a boat up Macquarie Street. So I was a young fella and it was quite exciting. Most of the people that had property were very concerned about it, but, you know, it seemed quite an adventure to me. had a consequence for a lot of farmers in the district because a lot of them were avoiding tax, and we didn't do much to sort of keep their records. They went down the creek. So I think they were all very pleased to see that flood at the time, because the taxation man was about, it was in the 50s when a lot of people were avoiding tax by selling in other people's names and doing all sorts of funny things, and I think a lot of them would have been caught other than for the flood.
A fourth generation stock and station agent, Mr. Milling dedicated more than 70 years to the advancement of livestock marketing, thoroughbred sales and racing, and rural and residential property sales and management. His leadership helped grow the Milling agencies into a business which has now operated for over 110 years. Mr. Milling was a tireless advocate for producers and agents, serving as president of the Dubbo and New South Wales Stock and Station Agents, and was the inaugural chairman of the Australian Council of Livestock New South Wales. He played a pivotal role in the development of the Dubbo sale yards and was a respected leader in thoroughbred breeding and racing, including 37 years as head of the Blood Horse Breeders Association. Beyond livestock and property, Mr. Milling showed remarkable foresight through diversification, establishing an international travel agency alongside his wife, Tony, which became one of the first American Express international representative agencies in Australia. As inaugural chairman of the Dubbo Development Corporation, Mr. Milling helped shape the growth and future of the city of Dubbo. In recognition of his lifetime of service, he was awarded the Order of Australia Medal in 2023 for services to the livestock industry. At that time, Ian Thurlow asked Mr. Milling how he felt about receiving this honour.
Absolutely marvellous. I'm very chuffed about it.
Well, you've obviously achieved a great many things throughout your career of some 75-odd years. How did it all start for you?
I was doing an accountancy course with a firm in Sydney, and I wasn't enjoying it. My grandfather happened to be in Sydney on holiday, and he rang me up one morning and said, Peter, I'd like to meet you in the morning at Circular Quay. Oh, yes. I said, what's this all about? He said, I'm coming into Sydney, he said, to buy a suit, a new suit for the Dunedoo show. So I met him at Circular Quay at 9 o'clock, and we walked up to Gowings. Most people in the bush bought their clothes at Gowings, I think, in those days. And I didn't help him buy the suit, he bought it himself. And on the way down afterwards, we went down and we had morning tea at the offices of country producers, and we had lunch at Pitsun and Badgery in the Palm Court. And in the afternoon, I'm sitting on the steps at Dalgetty's while he's upstairs having a few whiskies with his mates. But during the day, he said to me, how are you getting on with this accountancy course? I said, oh, I don't think it's for me, Grandfather. I said, it's foreign to me. It's foreign to the way I think. And I said, I don't know much about it. He said, I'll tell you what to do. He said, give it away. He said, it's no good. He said, you'll do no good at that. He said, never make any money at that. Plenty of accountants about. I said, yeah, and what would I do? He said, come home and work for me. Well, I never thought I'd ever get a job in the firm, because my grandfather had 11 children, and a good many of them were working for him in the office. And of course, in those days, there's not a lot of jobs about. He said, I want you to come home and work for me. So I said, righto, when do you want me to start? He said, tomorrow if you like, but he should be there Monday. So I said, very well. So Monday morning I fronted up. I thought, I'll get in early. We arrived at the office at 8 o'clock, and it was full of people. They were all at work at 8 o'clock. Anyhow, they said to me, the boss wants to see you, go through to his private office. So I went in and he looked me up and down. I must have looked a bit straggly, because he said to me, have you got a tie? I said, yes, I have. I got a school tie. Well, he said, go home and put it on, because he said, I'll tell you something, son, just remember this. Look like a bagman and that's how you'll be treated. I said, oh, well, all right. So I did that. Came back to the office, and they all ushered me through to his office once again, and he said, now here's a job for you. I want you to go up to Cooler. There's a property up there, and he said, the man that owns it's got all the particulars written out, and he said, he wants to sell it, and he said, I think I've got to buy a little bit. So get the details and bring them back here to me. I said, how will I get up there? He said, there's a Plymouth car, he said, at the front of the office. He said, hop into that and go up. I said, oh, I thought all my Christmases had come at once. So I hopped in the car and I'm driving out of Dunedin that morning, and I'll never forget the feeling I had. Here I was driving a motor car, and not many people drove motor cars, of course, about my age. And I'm driving a motor car, I've got a job, and I'm off to see a client. So I did that, and I went and spoke to Mr. Hope Harnett, was the man that owned the property, and he showed me around the place and showed me where the boundaries were and gave me morning tea, which I was very chuffed about. And I drove back to Dunedoo and gave the particulars to my grandfather, who said to me, "What do you think of that place?" "Oh," I said, "Grandfather," I said, "it's a beautiful property." "Oh God," I said, "it's a nice place." But I said, "It's too dear." Grandfather looked at me, he said, "What did you say?" He said, I said, "Oh, it's too dear." Just imagine me at about 17 or 18 years of age saying it was too dear. I wouldn't have any idea. Well, he just quietly got up, never said anything to me, just walked over and he closed the door of the office. And I thought, "Oh, I think I must have Ubered here." Anyhow, he said, "I'm going to tell you something, son." He said, "I expect you'll be a stock and station agent for the rest of your life. Don't ever let me hear you say that again. Might be too dear for you, might be too dear for Jack and Harry, but for Bill it's not. And there's always somebody out there that doesn't think it's too dear." So he said, "Don't forget that."
Very wise words. I'm sure that you gained some very wise advice from your grandfather and from your father. I'm sure you've taken that right through your career, haven't you?
I have. I've never forgotten that. I've had a lot of men come in here and tell me if they wanted to sell their property, and they've told me a price and I've been shuddered. I thought to myself, "That's ridiculous. She won't get that for it." But I didn't say that. I didn't tell them that. And in certain instances, we sold the place.
What would you say is the most vital thing to protect as a businessman, as a person? What would you say that is?
Well, I think your reputation has got to be guarded 24 hours a day if you're in business. And if you're going to guard it 24 hours a day, you stick to the truth and nothing but the truth. And if somebody tells you something that you think is not correct, be man enough to say, "Well, look, you believe that, but I don't."
Have you enjoyed your illustrious career some 75 years?
I've had a ball. I mean, I've thought how lucky I was to be a stock and station agent, because it's a wonderful life. You meet thousands of people almost a weekly, and if you can remember their names, you'll do all right.
Your 2 to U program, you've been there longer than any of the staff and indeed the current owners who bought Radio 2 to U as Western Broadcasters in November of 1987. You came with the place basically, didn't you?
Yes. Well, my father started the program, and most of the Milling family have had a go at it at one stage or another. But he started in early 1948. My first program was in 1948, because one morning I'd been out on the Saturday night, and it was a Sunday morning program for many, many years, and I'd been out playing about for Saturday night and hadn't been in bed very long. And my father came out and said, "You'll have to get up and do this broadcast." Bad throat, and he couldn't speak very well, had the flu. And I said, "I can't do that." He said, "Yes, you can. Here's the file. Off you go." So off I went, and 2DU studios were up at the top of Tamworth Street in those days. And I went up, and they had no front door on it. It was an army hut, the studio. And I walked in, and this fellow looked up and he said to me, I suppose I look pretty straight looking, he said to me, "What do you want?" And I said, "I'm here to do the program for Mr. Milling." And he looked at me two or three times and he said, "You can't do that." I said, "I'd agree with you there, but I said, I've got to have a go at it." So I struggled through the program, and I must say made a hell of a mess of it, of course. And I got through, and when I got home, the telephone rang at home and I answered it, and it was Mr. Wilkins. He was the head livestock buyer for Ganeran Meat Company, and he was ringing to find out how my father was, because he had heard the program. Well, he said, "Peter," he said, "you got through the program all right, but," he said, "I'll tell you this," he said, "you haven't got much of a future in radio."
And here you are, probably the longest standing individual broadcaster as such in Australia. How does that make you feel?
Daunted.
It is a huge record.
Well, I haven't done it every. I've done it most. I've been doing it on and off ever since then, but I've been doing it at various stages. I did it, I think, for 4 or 5 years at one stage, that just in one stretch. But my brother did it for a time, and other people in the firm have done it at different times, as they do now. Graham Anderson does it for me when I'm not available. And so that hasn't just been me. It's been other people. But my father did it for many years. He really started it off in conjunction with the owner of 2DU, Mr. Wally Grant. They got together and decided that there ought to be, or my father suggested, there ought to be a rural program that would provide information to the farmers that they don't get normally.
You've had a a marvellous career, but you've also been involved. You were the inaugural chairman of the Dubbo Development Corporation from 1977 to 78. You've been the chairman of a number of different organisations or groups related to your own business. I mean,
mostly agency businesses.
Yes. Good on you, Mr. Milling. Peter Milling, OAM. Thank you very much for having me along for this chat.
I've got a little bit of a story to tell you that'll put a smile in your dial.
You know, I've got three wonderful daughters, and one of them handed me a piece of paper which is called The Happiest Fairy Tale, and I'll read it to you. Once upon a time, a guy asked a girl, "Will you marry me?" And the girl said, "No." Emphatically no. And the girl lived happily ever after and went shopping, dancing, drank whole bottles of wine, chatted for hours on the phone to friends, always had a clean house, watched chick flicks without feeling guilty, never had to cook, did whatever the hell she wanted, never argued, didn't get fat, travelled more, had a career, had many lovers, didn't save money, and had all the hot water to herself. She went to the theatre, never watched sports, owned every remote control in the house, never wore lacy lingerie that went up her backside, and had high self-esteem, never cried or yelled, and felt and looked fabulous all the time. Well, now, out of my three daughters, if you know them, I bet you could pick the one that gave me that.
Listeners, that's all our time today. I'm Peter Milling. Thank you, and bye-bye.
Mr. Milling is survived by his daughters Danielle, Gabrielle and Felicity and their families. Management and staff of Radio 2DU offer our condolences to his family and colleagues at Peter Milling & Company. Mr. Milling's legacy of integrity, leadership and service will be long remembered. May he rest in peace. This is 2DU.